A new survey from FSU shows political disagreements are having an increasingly negative impact on relationships. Gina Jordan talks with Ryan Owens, the director of FSU's Institute for Governance and Civics, about what the survey reveals regarding America's political polarization. She also speaks with Christine Cox, director of the Village Square Tallahassee, which strives to bridge such divides through civil dialogue.
Political disagreements. Have you had any lately? These are apparently becoming really problematic when it comes to relationships. FSU's Institute for Governance and Civics has a new report that looked at how disagreeing over politics is affecting our personal connections. That study found that over two-thirds of Americans are skeptical that people with different political views can work out their differences. Around two-thirds of each political party, members of each party, describe the opposing party as morally worse or more dishonest than other Americans. And here's the kicker. More than a quarter of Americans reported a friendship ended, and about a fifth of respondents said they stopped talking to a friend because of political disagreements. Ryan Owens is going to break that down for us. He's director of the Institute for Governance and Civics at FSU. Welcome back, Ryan.
Thanks, Gina. Glad to be here.
We're very glad to have you. So this report seems to suggest what a lot of us have been thinking, which is that we are a very polarized country. True?
Yes. Yes, and it's stressing us out. And so there are two things really that I draw from this study. One is the fact that people are more and more, you know, siloed off from each other and concerned about politics, right? So that's one thing. The other thing, and perhaps this is a little bit more alarming from my perspective, is that our views of the other side, if you will, are becoming more and more jaded and negative, and that's a real problem.
It seems like it's getting pretty nasty. Did anything really particularly surprise you in these results?
So looking at whether people are pessimistic or skeptical about the left and the right being able to come together, I mean, both Democrats and Republicans were looking at, you know, 74% and 60% say that they don't think we can come together. Now, what we typically see is in things like emergencies, wars, things like that, people do come together, but it's just not good. This is just there's latent negativity right now, and it seems to be growing. It's metastasizing in our body politic.
Yeah. The study shows, you mentioned pessimism, lots of frustration, rising stress around political differences. I can only imagine that these kind of emotions are instantly going to change the way we engage with each other. And in fact, we probably don't want to engage at all.
That's right. The more people begin to identify themselves or to define themselves with politics, it's going to become more and more difficult to deal with people who have a different perspective and define themselves a different way. So not only is it that you're disagreeing about politics, well, now all of a sudden it's like you're disagreeing with me and who I am as a person. And that's not good.
Yeah. When we think of political disagreements, that should be about policy or the values that guide us when we vote, right? But instead, it's turning into like moral judgments or personal judgments against other people. Did you see more of that in your research?
100% we did. So one of the questions we ask is, such and such people, do they share your values? And do you think that they're more or less trustworthy or dishonest than the average person? Democrats and Republicans, 73 and 71% say the other side does not share my views. When we dig down a little further and we say, do you think that the other side is dishonest? There, we see some pretty alarming numbers. Both Democrats and Republicans, at least 64%, think that the other side is dishonest or more immoral than the average American. You can't have a well-functioning society when there's that degree of hostility, skepticism, trepidation about the other side. I mean, that's how, frankly, I mean, that's how civil wars start, right? I'm not saying that this is going to lead to that, but I mean, these are sort of the necessary preconditions for that kind of thinking.
There are certainly people now avoiding particular relationships. There are people censoring themselves because things have gotten so nasty. So if we're looking at a party affiliation, if we're looking at older versus younger voters, did you find much variation in these findings in those demographics?
Yeah, well, I mean, what we do see across many of the studies that we've done is that younger people, on most issues, not all, but younger people tend to be less politically tolerant, more likely to be open to political violence. This is something that's happening across all generations, but it seems to be a little bit worse with the youngest generation that's out there, the 18 to 29 year olds. We do know from the data that people who are more civically aware, they know more about civics, things like that, they're considerably less likely to engage in this kind of politically intolerant behavior.
The serious divisions we have happening in the country. You've got social media, you have partisan media outlets where viewers are stuck in a slanted feedback loop. And we're talking both sides of the aisle, media outlets. How do you think that this could be a big source of the problem versus having face-to-face daily interactions?
Yeah, I think that's right. And age is part of it. When you're younger, a lot of things haven't formed cognitively yet. You're more susceptible to different kinds of thinking and intolerance. You can grow out of that. But I think being on the phones is not a good thing. Being away from human interaction is a terrible thing. Because when you look somebody in the eyes, it is a lot different than getting keyboard courage and posting something stupid on Facebook or X or whatever. So there's definitely a problem here with social media. We have to address it as a culture. I mean, there's First Amendment rights when somebody becomes an adult, but I think at the minor age, there are some things that we really need to consider in terms of allowing minors on social media. And the other thing we need right now, frankly, are just leaders to step up. It's one thing to be divisive. It's another thing to be laying the predicate for revolutionary behavior. We need leaders to step up at this point in time and say, you know what? Calm down. We have a republic here, we have a rule of law, and you damn well better follow it because if you don't, there are going to be serious consequences. We don't have that right now. What we have is pandering, and that is contributing to this problem.
Yeah, your research to me suggests that we don't really trust each other so much. We're not really willing to compromise so much. Certainly, there's a lack of open-mindedness about what's happening on the other side and say, I know better than you do. So it seems like we're losing that ability or even just losing any willingness to disagree productively.
Yeah, we need to teach people that skill. I mean, it is something that's learned. We have learned this through the centuries. Western civilization has gone through these kinds of throes, civil wars, intolerance, killings over politics, over religion. And basically, what we had during the Enlightenment then was a ceasefire, an agreement that free speech is valuable because if you don't have that, it means the government is going to step in and tell you what you can and cannot think. And the government can't be trusted on these things. For all of the things we've seen throughout history, we can see why. So we have had an armistice built around the recognition that when this train goes off the rails, it goes really, really badly. And what we're seeing right now is small deviations from that. People sort of tinkering around with authoritarian impulses, with totalitarian impulses, collective impulses that have always gone poorly for us throughout history.
Yeah, this term civil war has come up a couple of times. It's something that I've talked about with friends. There was a movie that came out in the last year. It kind of feels like that. It almost feels like we're heading that way. What do you think about that?
Well, it's funny. I've talked about this with my wife a few times, right? And we kind of have these discussions like, man, things aren't looking great. And why is it that we're not headed towards something worse right now? And the one thing that I can recognize at least is, during the Civil War, we were polarized over something, and not only was it the polarization, generally speaking, kind of an ideological or a humanitarian thing, but it was also geographically distributed, right? So everybody who believed one thing mostly were in one side and the other was down on the other side. We don't have that geographic distribution right now. We have an urban-rural distribution for a large part, but that doesn't lend itself to the same kind of dynamic as an us and them sort of thing geographically. If it ever spilled over into that context, then I think we'd have a problem on our hands. But at the end of the day, I do think that a lot of these numbers are drawn out by their interactions on social media, by what they see there, what they see on the news. And I think when you get people away from that stuff and they begin to interact with others in their community a little bit more, that stuff goes away. So if we can figure out a way to deal with the biased or polarizing press and social media, I think we'll be in a much better place. But it's going to take time to figure out how to handle that dynamic.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine. I mean, it has to happen eventually, one would think, but it's hard to imagine. So, despite all the pessimism, I guess, that we see in that report, did you find any signs of resilience or opportunities for rebuilding healthy political dialogue?
Not so much in this particular report, but yes, in the other reports that we have looked at. So I mentioned one before where we can see that when people are more civically educated, the less likely they are to be politically intolerant. And we see that with students, we see that with adults older than that. So I think the sign for optimism is that when we teach people how to be good citizens, they're much more likely to be good citizens. Yeah, we have real problems, but there is an obvious and very simple solution. And that is just teach people about the structure of American government and not just the what, like how many people are in Congress. Yeah, that's important to know, but more important is the why, right? Why do we have a separation of powers? Why do we have a First Amendment? Why do we have term limits for a president? Things like this, these are more important to understand because you're getting at useful, important, normative questions that people have to grapple with. And if they can learn how to grapple with those now, they're going to be much more effective at learning how to grapple with them later in real life, if you will, when they're forced to make these decisions as citizens.
Yeah. Well, you guys are working on this at the IGC, but what kind of responsibility do any schools have? Do civic organizations have? Community organizations, faith groups? What do you think?
Well, let me focus first on the university setting. We're just about to the point where we have a new degree program being offered at FSU. It'll be a new bachelor's degree in civics and liberty studies, where students are going to engage in precisely these kinds of questions. And not only are they going to learn civic skills, but they're also going to learn things like social science skills, technological skills, where they can bring social science thinking, technocratic skills to bear on important normative questions. And I think that's something that universities across the board need to do. We cannot continue to churn out students who don't have a firm grasp on what America is and stands for, because we're going to get more of the same product that we have right now. As public institutions funded by the legislature, by the taxpayers, we have an obligation to make sure that we're churning out good citizens and that we're good stewards of the country's and our state's future. I think civics groups around the country are doing a good job right now. They're doing the best they can. It's really, really tough because all the incentives right now are for short-term gains. And those short-term gains come from getting people whipped up into a frenzy. So it's a long game. We have to teach people to avoid those short-term interests for long-term stability. We've got to incentivize them to do that. We have to teach them good habits. And that comes at the university, it comes at K-12, it comes through civics groups. And frankly, it comes from our leaders right now who are doing a pretty terrible job of it.
And there are plenty of people who are absolutely stuck in their ways. There won't be any changing their minds or trying to open their minds. We see things that need to happen, but if these trends that you found in that report continue unchecked, what do you think American social life looks like in 10
Yeah,
years?
I mean, it's funny that you ask the question that way because, in a sense, I almost feel like the ghost of Christmas future, right? Like, I mean, what is going to happen to Tiny Tim if these visions go unheeded? It's tough to say. Like, I have a profound positive view of the American people, people generally, and I think people tend to want what's best for themselves, for their families. I think they tend to want to help their neighbors and such. So I'm optimistic about our future despite all this stuff. I mean, think about how off the rails this could be going right now with social media, with foreign influence. You got China trying to screw with us in every step of the way. There's a lot of bad things happening to us, and yet we've been resilient in the face of it. So you can look at these data and be alarmed as I am, absolutely 100%. At the same time, you can look at it and say, my goodness, even in the face of all of the things that have been tossed at us, people are still working. They're still getting their stuff done. They're still going on with their lives. They're still voting and being good citizens by and large. So I don't know is the short answer. We can't possibly know. All we can do is look at these data, recognize we've got a problem, and try to figure out what we can do to resolve it. Again, I think greater civic education in the K-12 space and at the universities is going to help us in the long run to get through this.
Well, I know you guys are working hard at FSU's Institute for Governance and Civics, the IGC, and we thank you for the work you're doing, and we'll keep watching.
Well, I appreciate that. Thanks for having me on.
Someone who knows much about bridging political divides is Christine Cox, director of the Village Square Tallahassee. Hi, Christine.
Hi, Gina. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're so glad you're here. Just tell us a little bit about the Village Square and what you guys do.
Absolutely. So the Village Square is a nonprofit, nonpartisan, all the partisans invited organization that has existed in Tallahassee and in other communities around our country. But we've been here in Tallahassee for almost two decades now. And since the beginning, we've liked to say that we are a nervy bunch of liberals and conservatives, although that's expanded to any and all labels, who believe that dialogue and disagreement make for a good conversation, a good time, and a good country.
And you know, that's a good point. It should be a good time, right? A good discussion. But we've been talking about how divided the country is and how political disagreements oftentimes are feeling increasingly personal. So how does the Village Square help folks stay connected rather than divided?
Mm-hmm. That is the key. We do that by bringing people together in person in particular, because that's where the magic happens at the super local level. So we host forums, gatherings, whether they're educational or social, just times for people to come together and meet each other in a place where we've kind of set the bar at respect and listening, and that we're not trying to change each other's minds. That's another key. We're here to learn, and we're here to understand and learn that, quote, the other side isn't the evil to our good.
Civil dialogue, respectful disagreement, that seems so far-fetched for so many people right now. What are we missing when we avoid having civil debate?
Oh my gosh, we're missing a lot. You know, it's understandable that in super toxic, polarizing times, people get exhausted, scared, apprehensive, whatever, and just go farther into our own silos and our own tribes, or whatever term you want to use that says, this feels safe and comfortable, and I'm tired of feeling uncomfortable, and I don't want to do that anymore. But what that does, unfortunately, is that just makes the problem worse. We're doom scrolling, and we're on social media, or we're only watching, listening, reading a particular type of media that speaks to us, and we're not consuming the broad spectrum that might open our mind to the other side of an issue or a perspective.
Yeah. What have you learned about human connection from bringing people with deeply different viewpoints into the same room to talk it out?
Oh my gosh, we see time and time again what a difference it makes. It just can be life-changing for people. They tell us, you know, right there in the middle of a program, or they tell us walking out, or in feedback surveys after, we're constantly wanting to make sure that our programs, our events are having an impact. So we're constantly asking that question and collecting that kind of feedback. But there's really nothing like leaving your labels at the door and coming in as humans and knowing we all have families, we all have hobbies, interests, different, you know, life experiences that we can share. And when you start just talking to people like that, like you might do at the grocery store checkout line or with a neighbor down the street, you're talking about the things that really matter the most, then something like politics is kind of like the 30th thing down the list by that point of what, quote, defines that person.
Yeah. What skills do you think we need the most when it comes to navigating political differences? What are we missing?
Ooh, we definitely have to, you know, enter into conversations, interactions with each other with open minds, open hearts, less judgment, put those listening ears on. It's a lot of the things we actually learned in kindergarten, right? There's those posters, everything I need to know, I learned in kindergarten. But we forget about that over time, and life gets hard and difficult, and we have negative experiences that impact now how we are going to go throughout the world. But really, just taking like 10 steps back and going back to the basics of treating each other with respect, too. How would we want to be treated? So, kind of flipping that around and saying, okay, well, then I'm going to go into this to learn, to understand, because this person feels just as passionately as I do, but we're on other ends of the spectrum. I would say also leading with curiosity is a really important skill.
That sounds like great advice. I want to put you on the spot. Can you think of an example where you have been witness to a conversation at the village square that shifted someone's perspective, or maybe it was clear that they suddenly understood the other side?
Oh, yes, time and time again. One that really strikes me was at one of our dinner programs. It was on one of the most challenging topics. It was on abortion. I was standing in the back of the room watching the panel. Again, we had all the various perspectives up there. And someone who had been a part of the Village Square, kind of from the beginning, came up to me, kind of whispered in my ear and said, "Wow, that person from that organization," which was obviously on the other end of the spectrum from the person talking to me, "she's really pretty smart and she really seems to know a few things." And so it was kind of like his mind was blown. It was a real life example of the us versus them, or, labeling, quote, the other side of a topic as being either dumb or uneducated or overly sensitive or, too passionate about it, or, just any of the negatives you can think of that would be on an extreme end. And just paring it down to, wow, that's going to give me pause. Now, was his mind changed on the topic leaving that program? No, absolutely not. But did he now have a more of a, a higher respect for the other side of the issue? Absolutely. And so I consider that 100% success.
Yeah, that's also where face-to-face conversation can make such a difference.
Right. What comes with it is kind of a beautiful vulnerability too, because now we're not hiding behind our phones, laptops, whatever, computers. Maybe we're going to be challenged a little. So while it might get uncomfortable at times, it might also be the best experience ever, because we can have the back and forth, and it's just completely different than doing something like that on social media. Social media has its wonderful aspects, and it also has some really awful aspects. It's like any tool, right? We can use it for good, or we can use it for evil, or we can get sucked down a rabbit hole that we didn't really kind of want to go down to begin with.
Yeah. I feel like with the job that you have at the Village Square, especially when there's so much polarization happening nationally, this has to give you hope that we can do better somehow.
Absolutely. We have all the hope. And you're right, it's 100% necessary to keep moving forward. And we see it now with the growth and expansion of other organizations around the country that are in some way similarly aligned to what the Village Square mission is. A couple decades ago, when we started this, we were one of the only ones really doing what we're doing the way we're doing it. But now we see the expansion of it. So obviously, a good thing has taken off. And also, just the various research and polls and things that are constantly showing up, which is that it happens at the local level. People still want this. So let's keep going. Let's keep forging ahead, no matter how uncomfortable it might be. Plus, what else is there, right? We can't, just spin down into the toxicity. So yeah, we have to remain hopeful and keep forging ahead.
And you guys are doing that again next month. You're hosting a God Squad conversation titled Us Versus Them, Good Versus Evil, which is just so perfectly fitting with what we're talking about. Tell us about God Squad and preview that event for us.
right? There couldn't be a better title for things right now, and what we're talking about here. Yes, the God Squad is in its 16th season of programming. So that came along in the early years of the Village Square. And the God Squad is what we like to say, the little tagline there is for people of all faiths or no faith at all. It's a diverse panel of faith leaders. So they have very divergent and strongly held viewpoints on basically any topic that you could venture into. And it's just so beautiful to see them address these topics, not tiptoeing around, not watering down. So they're addressing really important topics and they're being very honest, but also very respectful and offering just that diversity is wonderful so that everybody in the audience can be a little bit maybe exposed to something different in a way that they never would have before. So, yes, this good versus evil, us versus them program that's coming up on February 13th is just another example of the God Squad just diving in and saying, let's go for it. You know, we've got to stop labeling the other side as evil. So they'll address it from a faith perspective, right? What does that look like within the different faiths? And then just kind of different perspectives on what that means in living our lives.
And any of these Village Square forums, including the God Squad conversations, these are open to the public.
Yeah, come on out, check it out. We ask for pre-registration online, but yes, we would love to see new friends and old friends back again.
Yeah, some more information on the Village Square Tallahassee website. Christine, best of luck with everything. You guys are doing a great job and keep on keeping on.
Thank you so much, Gina. Appreciate you for having me.